Hold up. Before we get into this next episode, I want to tell you about our virtual conference that's coming up on February 15th and February 22nd. We did it two Thursdays in a row this year because we wanted to make sure that the maximum amount of people could come for each day, since the lineup is just looking absolutely incredible. As you know, we do. Let me name a few of the guests that we've got coming because it is worth talking about. We've got Jason Louis. We've got Shreya Shankar. We've got Dhruv, who is product applied AI at Uber. We've got Cameron Wolf, who's got an incredible podcast and he's director of AI at Rebuy Engine. We've got Lauren Lockridge, who is working at Google, also doing some product stuff. Oh, why is there so many product people here? Funny you should ask that, because we've got a whole AI product owners track along with an engineering track. And then, as we like to, we've got some hands-on workshops too. Let me just tell you some of these other names just for a moment, you know, because we've got them coming and it is really cool. I haven't named any of the keynotes yet either, by the way. Go and check them out on your own. If you want, just go to home.mlops.community and you'll see. But we've got Tunji, who's the lead researcher on the DeepSpeed project at Microsoft. We've got Holden, who is the open source engineer at Netflix. We've got Kai, who's leading the AI platform at Uber. You may have heard of it. It's called Michelangelo. Oh my gosh. We've got Fazan, who's product manager at LinkedIn. Jerry Louis, who created good old Llama Index. Oh, he's coming. We've got Matt Sharp, friend of the pod. Shreya Rajpal, the creator and CEO of Guardrails. Oh my gosh, the list goes on. There's 70 plus people that will be with us at this conference. So I hope to see you there. And now let's get into this podcast.
I'm Morgan. I lead the Growth ML team at Weights & Biases. And I drink my coffee as an Americano with a little bit of cold milk.
Hi, I'm Manish. I work as a growth machine learning engineer at Weights & Biases with Morgan. And I prefer tea, and I like to drink tea such like oolong or chamomile.
Welcome back to the MLOps Community Podcast. I am your host, Dimitri Ose, and you are in for a treat today. We've got Morgan and Anish from Weights & Biases joining us to talk all about what they've been up to, how they're doing things. You know, their exact title is around growth, but I think they're more like DevRel. We talked about so many different pieces, going from all the cool products that they've been seeing being put out, all the different projects that people who are using Weights & Biases are putting out. And as you will hear in this conversation, make sure if you're using Weights & Biases to give them due credit, it's on their OKRs. So let's not let these folks down. Come on now, cite them in your papers. And at the end of the conversation, we got into such a cool musing around evaluation as a service, around hallucination mitigation as a service. And hopefully you've heard by now, I've got a little bit of a song that we dropped for the last AI in production conference. This song is all about them prompt templates, and some of the lyrics are, evaluate me, make the AI, make sure the AI, it is, no, what am I saying? I don't even know anymore, but we dropped a song. I've been threatening for ages to actually create something and put it on Spotify. I think it's been a good 3 years now. Back in the day, I wanted to create a song all about going real time, we're going to real time, but never got around to it. Today, I happily can say that my time is best spent creating a funny song for you all. And I hope it's one of those songs that's a banger and you'll listen to it whether or not you're into AI. But wow, if you are a nerd like myself and you can chuckle at the lyrics being "my prompts are my special sauce," then this song is for you. We'll have a little play right now. I'll play it for you so that you can hear it. You can give me your feedback, and let's get into the conversation with Anish and Morgan. Huge shout out to Weights and Biases for continuing to sponsor the MLOps community. It is a blast having the knowledge that they bring to this community. Song. And of course, if you like it, you know what to do. Just stream it on Spotify on repeat. I get 0.0002 cents for every stream, so I'm trying to fund my next startup with these streams. Let's go. Dude, I gotta start with this. Morgan, what's this breakfast radio show that you hosted in college?
Good question. So in third year university, I don't know, myself and a friend, we saw the radio, college radio had this opening for a breakfast radio show once a week, and we're like, we could do that, let's try that. I mean, we just signed up, and so there was like three of us. Yeah, can't be that hard. He was the talker, and then we pulled in a third friend. I was definitely quieter, so I was kind of more on the soundboard and like hitting the play button. It was a lot of fun. Did it for about 6 weeks. In my university, there's this like charity, like fundraising week where like a lot of, you know, the different societies do different events, and it's a lot of fun. There's a fair bit of drinking involved, so we had, as a coming into a breakfast show at like 6:30 in the morning after a night before, we had a pretty loose show, I would say. Like nothing bad, but I think the editor at that point was kind of sick of us. So that was the end of our radio career. But I still have the recordings. I'm afraid to listen to them, but I might listen to them someday.
And were you playing music, or it was all talk show?
Music. Yeah. And as cheesy as we could make it, like all the 90s, early 2000s, like, yeah, cheesy hits.
What were some of the bangers you were playing?
Oh, there's definitely a lot of Spice Girls, Boyzone, Britney, all the girl bands, all the boy bands. Yeah, get you going in the morning.
And this was not in the 90s or early 2000s, not when they
this
were cool.
This was, 2007, I'd say, yeah.
All right, after their primes.
Yes, definitely.
And Anish, man, tell me a little bit about chemistry and what happened. You were studying that, and then you got sucked into the world of machine learning.
Yeah. So initially when I started doing chemistry stuff, I love the topics, and I loved PChem as a concept too. So I joined a lab or two. And then I realized that the actual physical process of doing the science wasn't actually that fun. Like pipetting things, or like going in and like putting in like lasers or like physical hardware kind of stuff wasn't really my type of science, I realized. But we use this like really awful graphical programming language, I forget the name of it at this point, to go and like analyze all these different experiments that we were doing. And I kind of like really fell in love with that side of the world of like connecting nodes that would then like give you insight about like, oh, like from these three different like lines of like sensors, for instance, it goes into this specific database, and then you can like graphically apply it to like some pre-made algorithm that they had like a symbol for. And so I was like, oh, like this is cool. Like, I can actually understand what's going on. And I realized like this is the side of the world I like a lot more. And so I got sucked into a whole bunch of like data stuff and programming around that. And then naturally just was like, okay, time to like give up chemistry. It's here to like do data programming based things. And luckily it was at the same time that my university started to like really dive into more data intensive classes. So like data engineering stuff and machine learning stuff. So it was like all the stars were lining up and I was like, if I don't do this now, I'm gonna like miss an opportunity. I felt like
it was meant to be. And now you both, for context, are working at Weights and Biases as machine learning engineers, and you're working with different customers that Weights and Biases has. Can you break down exactly what is the job? Because you're machine learning engineers, but it's a little bit of internal and external facing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So the roots of the team, our growth team, started with, you know, doing events like locally in SF at the time when it was a one-person team. Our leader, Lavanya, was running those, but also writing content for the blog and building integrations and, you know, examples. And that's really been kind of like we've still kind of stuck to like those core pillars to drive people into Weights and Biases. Mm-hmm. More recently, I think, yeah, over a year and a half ago now, we started a courses program, which is like really taken off. And I would say like that's our fourth one now. And that has been super fun. You know, the primary goal is to just deliver high quality ML education. You know, if it showcases Weights and Biases in the process, like all well and good, but definitely trying to like deliver, you know, the education and like the value to the folks first. But yeah, then like also internally, helping out across say the sales side of the business. You know, if you need to like jump on any user calls, if there's any like debugging that our support team can't do. Although I would say that's less of it now. Our support team are like legit and have grown, you know, a lot in the last year or two. Yeah. And then just kind of like, I think we're you know, constantly focused on user growth and like understanding where the field is going. We're quite active and like aware of what's going on, you know, Twitter and keeping on top of like new models, new architectures. So bringing that knowledge internally is also important as well to like, I know, let the product team know that like, yeah, hey, like large multimodal models are like coming and we need something for like text to image or text to video, you know, and not just like LLMs this year. Those kind of insights, I think I see our team doing well. Anish, did I miss anything?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think like, yeah, a big part of like what I see myself doing is interacting with the community a lot too. So like Morgan mentioned, is the community builds really cool stuff with or without Weights and Biases. And we as an MLOps platform really have to make sure that we're on top of our game to understand like, oh, like these are actual projects people are building and using in the real world. So let's make sure that we share that knowledge with the world in like really useful ways.
Yeah, I feel like in a different company, you would be called DevRel. But at this one, you're kind of called something else, even though you're doing kind of the same thing. And so it's cool to see that you're getting out there and getting that experience with what people are building in the community. Can you name off some of the stuff that you've been seeing that you're getting excited about?
I would say like the most recent thing I think that's really interesting is the Allen Institute folks, I believe, they released OLMO. And I just think like I like that project quite a lot because I think that one thing that at least Weights and Biases does well is this whole reproducibility piece. And I think that like the core tenets of this specific framework is to be like low carbon emissions, really reproducible, extremely shareable. And they also use Weights and Biases to like kind of share all that out to the world too. So it's kind of nice to see that it's like that frameworks exist that will actually be moving forward the science of like a lot of this large language model stuff, which I think the open source models are doing a great job of, and making sure that people aren't like repeating work or repeating frameworks such that they all diverge and like there's no like standardization around it. So I think OLMO is definitely something I think is really cool.
Yeah. I'd add, it just came out, I think, yesterday on Archive, the clean RL benchmark by Costa Huang, who's in Hugging Face now, but it was actually interned in Weights and Biases over a year ago. That's a really nice project, I think, because we see a huge amount of researchers use Weights and Biases. Sometimes they cite us, sometimes they they don't, we'd love if more people cited us. We can send you the citation if you if you're curious. But he, what was really interesting with
is that an OKR?
It might be the yeah this year.
That's why, yes, everyone out there, cite these folks. Make sure that you do that so that Morgan and Anish can crush their OKRs.
Exactly, yeah. Keep
but
the
wait,
happy.
Before we get into this, what is CleanRL? I didn't see that one.
Yeah, so it's been a project Costa has been running for a while. Like, the goal is to have really, yeah, like, clean implementations and evaluations of, like, standard RL or like models and benchmarks. And so the nice thing with the library is, like, similar to like the Allen AI, where they're like going for like extreme kind of like transparency and like reproducibility, they've also like released everything. They're less focused on, you know, releasing like model weights, or like, you know, it's not the aim of the project. It's more focused on evaluation. But they have it all completely instrumented in Weights and Biases. Their Weights and Biases, like, you know, project is completely open, so you can like go and poke around and see how different evaluations doing. And like, I was just skimming the paper yesterday, and like one of the things that emphasizes, like, you know, we're also making available like the actual, like, you know, loss curves and things like that, so not just the, like the final metric, but like how the model actually got there. So that was like a pretty cool project to see, and like a little bit, I think, yeah, given the resurgence of interest in RL with you know, all the like PPO and DPO going on with the LLMs, yeah, it was a nice project to finally come out. It was a big collaboration as well. Like, if you look at the paper, there's maybe like, I think, 30 or 40 authors there, so it's felt like a really nice community effort from like the RL community. Oh, as well,
yeah, you know, that's a big one when the authors takes up a full page itself, then you're in for a treat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about how you all are thinking about LLMs internally at Weights and Biases, because I know that before we hit record, there was some chatter that we had around, you are seeing what's out there. You're getting to experience the cutting edge and cool things that are happening, but you're also getting to potentially affect product when it comes to Weights and Biases, or just make sure that Weights and Biases itself is ahead of the curve when the new trends are coming out. So how do you think about currently just LLMs internally?
Yeah, so I think that there's a variety of places where I think LLMs work really well. I think, like, for instance, Morgan worked on like a quick win using LLM to help clean up some dirty data. So I think that it's like understanding where LLMs can actually be effective, and at the very least, create like a nice launching point for people to go ahead and like access knowledge or start work in a way that just makes their life easier. So, like, from our side, like, things such as creating like better translations for certain documentation, or creating like early PRs with like some pre-written code in the right locations, are like places where I think LLMs definitely help out quite a lot. And I think like the one project that we love to talk about a lot also is a WANbot, which is our like internal support bot in a way that goes ahead and like interacts with a lot of different data sources that are like public facing Weights and Biases style documentation, such that when anyone comes in and asks like really proprietary knowledge about Weights and Biases that unfortunately GPT is not trained on yet, it can go ahead and do that via like this like really complicated RAG pipelines.
And so if I'm understanding this correctly, it's more about how can we help plug in LLMs or let the user sync their LLM usage to what we are creating, as opposed to let's put an LLM under the hood and people now have text to SQL or something that maybe they don't really need, or they're not going to be using as much, unless it's what you're talking about with the WANbot, where, yeah, this is a perfect use case for using an LLM. Is that a correct assumption, or are you also thinking about it as like, let's plug in an LLM to the product and see how we can do that.
Yeah, so I think that it's kind of a mixture of both those. I think that one is feels more experimental than the other. So like from our perspective, I think it's we want to make sure that the large language model usage that we do still ensures that it's effective, I guess is like the biggest thing. And so like that incorporates a lot of different kind of like, I guess like we want to make sure that there's a multiple pieces to make like effective large language model based applications. I think part of it is like ensuring that the people who are using it get to interact with it in the way that makes the most sense for them. And so sometimes that may be as like having LLM be the driving layer at the very bottom that does a majority of the work. And other times it's as simple as letting the LLM just be a single piece in the workflow that the user can interact with and like turn off or on, depending on like how they're built, like how they, how that specific workflow is being used for whatever they're trying to do. So be it like the docs translation or like imputing or cleaning dirty data.
I think a lot of people are asking themselves, and like I definitely am, is like how many killer like, you know, product use cases there are for LLMs. Like there's some obviously like with like incredible product market fit, like Copilot and like Cursor and Alienish and a few companies. I know, I think like even up in the legal space are doing some like amazing work, but it kind of feels like a lot of the value of LLMs is, at least like when I like look at our product and the Weights & Biases business is, yeah, more in like back office operations, just making things a little bit more efficient, a little bit more productive, allowing people to scale more. At least that's like in the shorter term, that's like where all the quicker wins are. Like we have bounced ideas about, you know, what would be like, where it would be fun and interesting to add it to the product. And there's like some interesting use cases there, but I don't think any of them are revolutionary. I guess I shouldn't speak on behalf of our like product team. Maybe they're like cooking up something wild. But I think in general, like you see it in a lot of products that try and like shoehorn an LLM in just because they're trying to ride the hype. Like it's, it doesn't work in a lot of cases. Like people haven't found the right way to like really nail it, I find.
Yeah. And I feel like it's less of that now because people have had experiences where they're like, oh, we're just going to plug AI into our product and now it's revolutionary. And then when you actually use it, you realize that it's still a chatbot and it still doesn't understand me half the time or it hallucinates half the time and it's actually not the best experience. So I would rather have a different user experience. And I like that you all are taking a bit more of an approach of like, well, we have all these hammers. Do we need to go around looking for nails? Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The other, I think, impetus in our team to help build out these tools is just to build a muscle. Like we have a great machine learning team. Like everyone like has backgrounds in like ML from academia and industry, been doing it for years. But like this is new, right? And so I wanted to make sure that the team are that way like we build that muscle through like building like real use cases and not just like toy examples on the latest like open source model. But like ultimately, you know, we care about solving a task, be it like translating the docs or cleaning this little bit of data or whatever. So you know, you want to use the best models and the best techniques for that, as opposed to doing like a fun fine tune of a Llama 2 model that, you know, is kind of garbage compared to like GPT-4 at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's not actually that valuable.
Looking forward to Llama 3 for sure.
Yeah, let's see what happens in a few months or year. But I do like that where it's like, hey, let's look at the value that we can bring, not just like, is this going to get a bit of attention on Twitter for a while?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it kind of, you, in terms of like our work then and like on the growth side of things, it builds credibility in the long run to be able to point to like actual things you've put into production. So yeah, it kind of like works for multiple reasons for us, I think.
And what about this data cleanup that you're using, that use case? Can you give me more details on what that looks like?
Yeah, that's just a tiny one. So I shipped a small tool, and then I know someone in data team have also shipped something similar. Super straightforward, but we have some user facing forms where the user can put in their country they're in. In the back end, our like CRM has a standardized list of countries, and so we just need to like translate USA to United States of America, or like Antarctica to unknown, like because not everyone, you know, they put in like lots of different stuff in there. Yeah, so it's like complete overkill for GPT-4, but we use it anyways, but just because the volume of requests is like pretty manageable, it's still going to be pretty cheap, and you know, again, just going back to like reliability and performance. And it's, I mean, yeah, like I joke, it's the whole, like we were promised AGI and we got like country standardization is like what I joke about. But like it works, and it works much better than, you know, big complicated regex or a person having to manually fix them. So we ship it, we do it, we move on.
No, there is a topic that I think is top of mind for so many people. And it came up recently when I was talking to your coworker, Alex. It also has been on my mind for months because we did an evaluation survey in the MLOps community and we got a ton of responses. We also are doing another one right now and getting all kinds of great responses. I wrote a blog post on the first one. All of that data is open source, so if anybody wants to see it, they can. All of the new responses, we're going to be getting an incredible report made for it. I want to know how you all, being machine learning engineers out there in the trenches, are thinking about evaluation, because it feels to me like it is one of those, like, it's like the dark arts of evaluation still, and it depends on what your use case is. It also, a lot of times, is really not clear, and you still can't trust an LLM, but how are you all thinking about it?
Yeah, so I think the hard part is that, like, as we've all probably heard of earlier, is like a lot of the evaluation data that were used for like standard benchmarks have like been leaked in the training data itself. So like one thing that I always think when I go into evaluation is like, how much do I actually trust the novelty of the underlying data that this is being used for the evaluation? And then for me, I also think that it's about making sure you hit the breadth of different topics that you want to evaluate over. So like one project I think is great is like the LLM evaluation harness, which allows you to test amongst a bunch of different data sets. And so in a lot of different projects and models I've seen trained or fine-tuned, I think that the one graphic that, or like one visualization that I think is pretty effective, is almost looking at like these radar charts. So looking consistently at a bunch of these different data sets that you consistently look over as you like compare different models that you're training or seeing the efficacy of fine tuning against maybe like GPT. I think that it's important to grab data sets that are proper, I guess, for the different tasks that you're solving for, and then seeing how those compare to the other models that you want to see, that you want to be better than, for instance. So like it's very easy for you to like go to OpenLM leaderboard, find the one data set that this specific model is not good at, and fine tune towards it to make it slightly better for it. But that doesn't automatically mean that that is a better model in general. And so that's why I think for me, like the whole like radar concept of like having these different topics, data sets, and tasks are important for evaluation. And then ensuring that you maintain that across all your different experiments and ask yourself, like, is this data set still valid after all these different iterations of models exist? And like the training data and the fine tuning data underlying it is now like in a way slightly being falsified in a way, not to like be too like negative about it.
Yeah. I think another thing, maybe a lot of folks looking to use LLMs, or like open source LLMs, especially in practice, is I'm not sure how closely they actually look or understand the different benchmarks out there. Like, do they like even know what the MMLU task is or set of tasks is? like, does it matter that their model can like do multiple choice well if it's, you know, if it's like a whatever text-to-SQL model at the end of the day? There's like a, especially I think, and it's hard, right? Like, especially if you're a software developer coming into the space, it's like super intimidating. Like, you're not going to like go to the Hugging Face leaderboard, look at the four or five metrics in there, go and read those like papers, like look at a bunch of the examples in the evals, and then pick your model based on there, right? You're probably just going to pick the like the model that's highest on the leaderboard given your capacity to serve it or like fine tune and serve it. And yeah, you could argue maybe like rigorous teams should do all that work, but they're not ML engineers at the end of the day. Like, they're trying to just, you know, add another like building block to their product or whatever. So that's like super hard as well. And then yeah, there's the whole gaming of leaderboards and benchmarks on top of that, either like intentionally or accidentally, which is definitely an issue. But one thing we saw, I noticed that was quite interesting when we were evaluating our support bot and going back to the radar charts, Anish mentioned, was, so we're like, you know, the kind of good, it's good practice to evaluate your RAG system for a number of different aspects, like not only answer correctness or accuracy, but also like how well the retriever is doing. But it was interesting that we noticed with when we moved from, I think, GPT Turbo, let me get this right. Yeah, GPT Turbo, the like November preview to the January preview model, the context precision of the RAG system actually went down. And so that's just a measure of like how well did the system do in like paying attention to like the context it was given, you know, in when it like gave output the final answer. And that metric actually went down, even though our like accurate overall other metrics like the answer correctness and like, you know, the ultimate like results we kind of care about went up. And it was kind of interesting because like there's so much your code and examples and knowledge about weights and biases online that's all been like scooped up. And, you know, you ask ChatGPT about weights and biases and it'll give you like a pretty good answer for like a lot of questions without, you know, plugging into our RAG system. But it was interesting to see that the January model knew when to ignore the context. You know, we just like didn't have enough, you know, relevant context, for example, in our docs. You know, maybe we have a gap in our docs, but we still retrieved a few samples, even though they were maybe like low quality. And so the like January preview knew to like ignore those samples, which hurt it on the context precision, but like ultimately led to a final answer because it was like, nah, I know better than this. I'm just going to answer from my, you know, internal knowledge instead. So that was kind of a fun little insight we got from doing some of our evaluations.
So that brings up a fascinating point that I've been thinking about a lot lately, especially when it comes to RAGs, is how you evaluate the retrieval side of the RAG. And it feels like there was somehow baked into the update in January a I know better than you, so I'm not even going to retrieve. And so like how can you even evaluate that part? Because you need to be able to evaluate the retrieval side so that you can get better answers at the end of this whole RAG, like after the generation, right? And I feel like that's one of the foundational pieces, because if it doesn't retrieve the right thing, then you're looking at something that has more probability of being wrong at the end of the output.
Yeah, I think we're in a lucky position. Like I said, there's so much good weights and biases content online that's been like baked into these models. It's almost like a bonus because it seems to pay attention when the context is decent and ignore it when it's bad. That's kind of anecdotal. We haven't like studied that properly. But yeah, I agreed. If this was like a system,
this is just looking at a few metrics, right? This is you looking at a few metrics on the final output saying, well, it didn't actually retrieve, but the output still was quality. So it doesn't matter if it retrieved or if it didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we do need to dive deeper into like the individual samples, yeah, where it did poorly on context precision, and like, yeah, get a better feel of like what's going on. Because it short term, like it feels like a nice win, but like, yeah, that's not a, this isn't a sustainable way to like improve our system. We can't rely on,
yeah,
GPT-5 scooping up all the good stuff next time around.
Or either. Even if you're trying to help others that are in the situation that don't have a bunch of information on the internet, it's like, oh yeah, well, we didn't have that problem because we've got all kinds of great material that GPT trained on, right? So how do you lend a hand to those in need?
Exactly. So we do measure, yeah, context precision, context recall, answer, or context, I think, faithfulness, and context, Anish, maybe you know, might not know the other one. There's like faithfulness and relevancy, I think, is the other one. Kind of, I think there's a lot of blog posts out there at this point, kind of running through them.
Yeah, I think they gave it like a name, Ragus or something. I've seen that, yeah, like phrasing come around. It's like, yeah, I think that's the four things you mentioned are like the four tenets of Ragus or whatever.
Yeah, we actually use Ragus for some of those evals. Brad and my team kind of runs Wombat. I know he's used it. That would be like where I would start to like improve the system. And then like, it's like anything in like ML at the end of the day, you just need to be looking at a lot of data, a lot of like samples. One thing actually we did through Wombat's generation is we have like, this is, we're on our second evaluation set. The first one, you know, we like took a bunch of like queries from the wild and I clustered them. We like found kind of representative questions from each, and that gave us like about 130-140, and we did some like evaluations on that. But we looked again at the evaluation set like a couple of months later and kind of noticed like some of the questions were maybe duplicated or less relevant. So we've actually like whittled that down to I think 98 now, and it's probably like a higher quality eval. So it's, and we've moved on that eval from like 50% to like 80%, and we want to get it above 90 as we like, we kind of scale it out to a broader audience. But I think once you get over to like over 90, we want to go back and look at our evaluation set and make it harder again, because we don't want to like I feel like 90, 95 or 99, you know, is kind of like almost not irrelevant, right? But like, you want to make sure that like you're not just hitting numbers that like look pretty on a report, but actually like nailing all those like hard cases, and making your evals like, yeah, challenging.
Yeah, I guess I do. One thing I do want to expand on is I did really like the approach that was done with Wombat too for like the whole evaluation piece, in that like most people should be doing when they're building these applications is that you don't necessarily know how your users may automatically interact with the LM based application you're using. So like the most important thing is to make sure that you gather all this data from people actually using that application and then condensing it like standard user mining techniques. So like from our end, like we did that clustering tactics to figure out which topics, especially because it's a support bot, which I think is a common use case, figure out what support topics are people asking about, choosing the right question that's representative for that specific topic, and then building it into the evaluation framework itself. So I definitely think that like, every company using LLM should do what they've been doing with a lot of their other data products, is that make sure that they're actually mining the user data for the application that's using LLM and incorporating that piece into their whole evaluation framework.
And are you also, when you're mining that data, are you also making decisions on, oh, maybe we should update the docs so that people don't even have to ask this question, or maybe we should change the product a little bit so that this is more intuitive?
Yeah, for sure. I think like maybe not even the evaluation piece is not the only part where we see that, because our doc spot is like in our Slack page, our Slack, like a Slack channel. It's very easy to see directly like, hey, this answer is being returned is either old information that needs to be updated, or it's like not retrieving the right thing. And so like from our end, that the reason we care about the retrieval is like, one, is it grabbing that right context? And if it's not grabbing that context, that means that it doesn't exist. So for us, it definitely does inform us for how we should be updating or thinking about a lot of our documentation for sure.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that feels like a supercharger to the docs and like the whole DevRel efforts.
Yeah. Demetrius, I want to put you on the spot if you've, because there's a funny case I see and would love to pick your brain on the evaluation side. I see one bot occasionally answer, and usually like give it, it's when an answer like requires some code and like maybe like that's not immediately obvious from the docs.
Mm-hmm.
It returns an answer which isn't wrong, but isn't like the preferred way to do it. It basically finds workarounds of like how to use the API to like, you know, 4 or 5 lines of code instead of like a one method that it's missed for whatever reason. How would you classify that? Is that like correct, incorrect? Do we need an okay, like ish risk category?
Yeah, I would say that's incorrect, right? Because there's a better way to do it. So you're like teaching people how to be worse engineers in a way.
Even if it gets into the results they're looking for.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, it is true. It's like, what are you aiming for? Are you trying to make it as... It's that constant trade-off. This is a great question to think about because it's the trade-off when it comes to, do we care about tech debt and we just want to move fast and whatever, we'll figure it out if we find product market fit in 6 months? Or do we want to build for scale and have everything bulletproof? What phase are you in? Because depending on what phase you're in, I think you'll take that answer in a different way.
Mm. Yeah, that's it. That's actually a good point looking at it in our development cycle. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The other piece I was going to mention that you touched on, which I think is fascinating to zoom into, is that really diligent teams should be not only looking at what the best model is on the leaderboard, but also what do these data sets even mean? And then you go out and you create your own data set and you see how it matches up against that. And I do think one of the things that people aren't doing enough, or I haven't seen enough of, is the sharing of data sets, or like data sets as a service, or evaluation data sets as a service type thing. Because it's like, oh, as soon as the data set is public, then you get that gaming the data set type gaming the data set type actions happen. But if it's like you are able to send a model, fine-tuned model, to a data sets or evaluation data sets as a service and see how they rack up against it, that could be interesting at the end of the day, because you're able to not really have to, or it's a third party service and you don't have to worry that it's been gamed as much as if it was just with open data sets. You know, maybe you guys have seen something like that. I feel like I've seen one or two people release data sets that are specific verticals, and it's like new data sets for the financial data, and then their company is that, like, oh yeah, we are an evaluation company. And I've also heard a lot of debate around, is evaluation a full-fledged product, or is it just a feature inside of a product? So these are all things that I often wonder about.
I think the skeptic in me is always, if it's a hard sell for me to like almost go and use that service right off the top of my head, only because if we can't see the data, it's hard to understand the credibility of the underlying data source. Like, unless they give me some really deep understanding of like what types of data live in that data set, in which that like sells the secret sauce, then I think it's very hard to ask a lot of machine learning engineers or data, or even like people in like the, who are like security folks in a way, like making sure like this LLM is at a point where it's ready to be touched by customers, to go ahead and say, oh yeah, this third party service, which won't tell us any information about their data other than like whatever the marketing page says, yeah, I'm going to go trust its results. So I do think that for me, like the whole evaluation as a service, while I think it's an interesting concept, and I think we might even see them coming out here and there as like data is like a valuable resource in itself. I just think it's going to be a hard sell for me at the very least.
And what about if it is more of a, okay, you submit your model and then we evaluate it together type thing. So it's not like you just throw the model over the fence and I give you back a score. It's like you throw your model to me, but then you've got this dashboard. I've evaluated it in every way. I also know that you're going to use it for this specific use case. I wouldn't recommend it for these parts. Kind of like red teaming in a way, red teaming as a service. I think there are a few companies that do that. Off the top of my head, I think like Surge AI does that. And more specifically for these like popular models that come out. But that's one thing that it feels like could be done. Again, going back to that person that's just grabbing a model, that's a lot more work to say, all right, now I'm going to try and red team this model. I'm also going to figure out, I'm going to go read all these papers on what all these benchmarks mean and familiarize myself with that. You have to be very diligent. However, if that diligence keeps your model from saying some shit it shouldn't or doing something it shouldn't with when it's customer facing, is it worth it? That's, again, it's a constant trade-off, really, is the TLDR. And looking at it
for sure.
Like it, that.
I think you could solve a lot of the objection just like as a reputational or like credibility thing. Like if Kaggle did this, if Hugging Face did this, I think people would have a bit more faith maybe in a black box. But agreed, like ultimately, yeah, the like evaluating together story is much stronger. And I think you pair that with, you know, a strong capability to like generate synthetic data, like for that eval, like specific to the customer. Yeah, feels like pretty compelling because there's enough to be worrying about improving your like LLM system. Never mind going off and learning then about how to generate good synthetic data to evaluate. Like, why not just go to an external service for an expert for that part, maybe?
And the other piece on this, I was just reading a paper that it was like a TLDR of all the different ways to mitigate hallucinations that have come out so far. And it has a whole taxonomy on these hallucination mitigation techniques. And it feels like, wow, that is another thing that could be really cool, seeing how these different techniques work for your specific use case. And yeah, you can do it. You can go and spend the time. There's like 32 different techniques that they identify. So you could go and figure out like, this one looks cool. I guess it's more like throwing a dart at the wall and saying, all right, I like this name. Let's try that technique and see if it mitigates the hallucinations a little bit more. And then who knows if it actually does. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. And you really got to put it into practice. So then you may find out that it doesn't and you're screwed. And so there are things like that where it could be cool to have someone else that does it for you. They give you a stamp of approval and they also map it out for you. Like, so it's not just like this black box that you were talking about, Anish.
So I definitely think that hallucination piece is definitely very compelling for sure. I think that it's like kind of like you're alluding to is like, there's a lot of techniques that will keep on arising that will actually build upon previous techniques or still stay consistent between models. And I think that a lot of the hallucination mitigation tactics will stand the test of time a little bit more. Like as you create more models, these techniques will still be useful. So it's almost like, in a way, it's like earlier I mentioned the LM evaluation harness. I can imagine it being like a hallucination, like mitigation harness in a way where you want to test all these techniques alongside either generated data, like that evaluation data as a service or some sort of synthetic data and see how those like line up. So I definitely think super compelling use case. If no one has built it yet, they should go ahead and start building that type of stuff.
There we go. That might be the one that I just convinced myself to build. But it also feels like there are ways when it comes to like weights and biases and what you all are doing on being able to plug things like that in there, right? And say, again, it's not really what you're trying to do, but you make it easy for customers to say, all right, cool, you want to try this hallucination mitigation technique? We've got you covered. It's not like in our product, but we make it easy for you.
Yeah, 100%. We are just going to ship, maybe it'll be out by the time this gets published, a integration with Eleuther AI's LMEVAL harness, which will let you push all those like evaluation metrics into Weights and Biases, but it'll also generate something like not just into the workspace, but generate a Weights and Biases report like specific to that model to, you know, just make it more presentable for that particular report. And then you'll be able to add more evaluations to that report if you want. And yeah, same for hallucinations or like any other like toxicity, PII detection, any like of these metrics you want to track. You can like log those metrics into Weights and Biases. You can add a bunch of like all your data or like a subsample of your data to like inspect it. It could be like the best examples, the worst examples, you know. It's really powerful to be able to just have a, you know, reliable, performant kind of like system of record to be able to like dump whatever you want into it and like visualize it nicely. And also being able to share it. Like that's the other thing we see, especially in these cases, like you need to, especially say if you're a developer in a team and you're trying to convince your like manager, like your CTO, that we should like do something like fun with LLMs, like you need to be able to like convince them that it is performant and also like safe. And so being able to have a place where you've stored all of these and not like random spreadsheets or like Jupyter notebooks that you're like flicking through, but like nice polished reports in Weights and Biases, like is just kind of makes their life a little bit easier too.
100%. That's so cool to see. Well, fellas, I've taken up a ton of your time. This is awesome. I love seeing what you all are doing at Weights and Biases. And thanks for coming on here.
Thanks, Mirjish. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.